Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the States of America, to the republic. Justice for all.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Okay, great. Thank you, David. All right, we are through July in terms of the numbers. So when we look at the park revenues, you can see here from a property tax perspective, there's a timing difference from last year of about $4.3 million. We've talked about some of the local grants and gifts timing differences as well. That has not changed much from last month. When we look at the charges for services, we gained about $2.5 million or so from over July, driven by the zoo, but about 830 of that is due to the CZS timing for memberships. We'll talk about that when we look at the zoo numbers. So we're about $6.5 million over 2020, but we're very much in line with charges for services where we were in 2019 at this point. We talked about the self-insured health insurance that did not change much from last month. So total revenue is about $14.2 million over last year, which is about $3.5 million behind where we were in 2019. Looking at our operating expenses, we're about $3.1 million more than we were in 2020. We're about $5.9 million less than we were in 2019, and this is consistent where we were when we looked at the June numbers, again, driven by payroll and operations. So from a surplus perspective, we're running about 11 million higher than 2020, but you can see over half of which came in July and is timing only. And we're about $2 million better than we were than 2019. Capital expenditures, when we look at those, we're about $2.7 million more than last year in terms of investment. And that puts our net surplus at about $8.3 million more than last year and about $3.8 million more than 2019. Moving to the zoo. This is where we can see, again, timing. So just to remind everyone, Zoo Society this year, the timing of those payments are quarterly. Last year, we had monthly payments because we were spreading the cash flow a little bit more given COVID and the impact. So we received a significant check in July for the second quarter memberships. So that $830,000 is driven both by good performance and by timing. Total revenue is about $4.9 million greater than 2020. It's about $423,000 greater than 2019, so slightly better than 19. Good performance on the revenue side from the zoo. Operating expenses, $373,000 more than 2020. And very similar to last month, we're about $1.6 million below where we were in 2019. Again, driven by the inability to get some seasonals on staff. So payroll is down and some of our operational expenses continue to be down as well. So when we look at the operating subsidy, we can see here that we're about $4.5 million better than we were in 2020, about $2 million better than 2019. But again, we can take a significant portion of that as timing relative to the zoo memberships revenue. Capital expenditures, about $1.5 million greater than, less than 2020 at this point. And then from a net subsidy position, we can see it's about $2.2 million of a subsidy this year versus $8.2 million in 2020, and it was about $5.9 million in 2019. One of the lines that we added to this, because I'm sure everyone is curious, is the restricted revenue from the zip line. Just over the course of a few days in July, we did $19,500. We're currently at about $80,000 through yesterday in terms of the zip line revenue. And just as a reminder, we designate these for future capital project needs and report them down here. Moving along.
What was the total amount of the zip line that we have to amortize? Was that?
Total amount, one, excuse me.
The cost of the zip line.
Approximately 1.6 million.
Okay. Very good, thanks.
So that we're just to give an indication, I mean, we're trending what we thought we were doing on a weekly basis. We're actually pretty close to it. So so we're pretty happy with that so far to be at 80 grand in terms of the.
One and a half years.
Okay, jumping to the golf numbers, rounds were down about 10% for July. They're up about 13% year to date. Weather is having some impact. It's become a lot of precipitation, but we are up about 919,000 over 2020. That amount over 2020 reduced about 111,000 in July. Again, we're feeling some of the weather impact, but still strong performance there. Operating expenses are about $498,000 more than they were in 2020. That number has decreased about 246,000 from last month. And then from a surplus perspective, the surplus is about 421,000 better than 2020, and that was reduced by about 246,000 as well from last month. From a net surplus perspective, we're at about 351,000 better than last year after capital expenditures. We have a little bit of a delay with the clicker, David. I'll try and keep an eye on that. And this is our course by course comparison. When we look at Little Met and Mastic Woods, we do have some additional compensation and operational expenses at Mastic this year, and we do have some additional compensation expenses at Little Met this year. If you remember last year, we had a tremendous amount of difficulty bringing people on, and we actually shared some staff. So this year we've got more of the cost of the compensation running through by location because it's not shared staff, it's dedicated staff. Moving along to enterprise. We are up about 926,000 over 2020. We are actually down 1.7 million from 2019, so a significant swing. Operating expenses are about 480,000 greater than 2020 and about 1.1 million less than 2019, as we're trying to offset as much of that 1.7 million decrease of revenue. We haven't offset all of it, but we're offsetting as much as we can. And then from the operating surplus perspective, we're up about 447,000 versus 2020. We're down about 460,000 from where we were in 2019. And then after capital expenditures, the net surplus is about $223,000 year to date in the enterprise operations. And quickly looking at our by location performance, Edgewater Beach House, it's about $311,000 less than it was in 2019, and operating is about $100,000 less than 2019. East 55th Marina continues to resemble 2019's numbers. East 55th Restaurant looks to be about 80,000 less in revenue and about 70,000 less in expenses than where we were in 2019. Emerald Necklace Marina continues to resemble 2019, and Emerald Necklace Restaurant is about 212,000 less in revenue than 2019, about 203,000 less in expenses. And just remember that we have not been at full operations at the restaurant. We've been doing reduced menu and reduced capacity there.
But just as a positive note there at Emerald Necklace, it's booked almost all the way through November from September on. So the numbers have picked up as we basically reposition our staff from the Noshery, East 55th, Edgewater Beach House, and other locations. We'll pull back and push those operations up.
Thanks, Brian. And for the last slide, just some continued detail on a per location basis. Edgewater Pier comparable to 2020, about 50% less revenue and expense than we had in 2019. Wallace Lake is comparable to 2020, but about 50% less revenue and expense than 2019 as well, much like Edgewater Pier. Huntington with the Noshery is about 89,000 more revenue in 2019, about 38,000 more in operating margin. Ledge Lake is about 43,000 behind 2019, but operating margin is actually up about 20,000. And parking is down about 25% from where it was in 2019. So obviously these are year over year numbers, but just to give some color back to 2019 as a full year for basis of comparison. If there's no questions about that, then we're all set on financial.
What do you think, just guessing, and it's only a guess, what do you think the percentage loss of revenue was due to not being able to hire enough people?
Total revenue or charges for specific charges for services?
I was just thinking of the whole thing, just what the cost of, I realize that's hard to.
It is hard, but I would say from a charges for services perspective, we would typically do $28 to $30 million a year. I think 10 to 20% is lost directly relative to the inability to hire staff.
Okay, so.
So we know for sure, for instance, at Merwin's, we typically do $2.5 million in revenue there, and we basically had none this year. We'll pick up some as we get into the September, October timeframe to mitigate that a bit, but we could very well be down 1.5 at Merwin's alone.
Yeah. So maybe if you guessed at 4 or 5 million,
right,
that's probably in the ball range. And that's why it is so critical that we figure out some way to get a deeper staff for next summer. You know, I think it's, you know, everyone predicts that this thing will go away, but I don't think it's going to.
We agree with your statement.
Very good. Thank you.
Very much.
Thanks.
Brian.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, everyone. We have six, for the first time this year, six retiring guests that we're able to recognize. They have more than 160 years worth of service to Cleveland Metro Parks. Our very first guest is William J. Beckrest, service maintenance from the zoo. Come on up.
Bill has more than 30 years of service here at the zoo, and his contributions are certainly immeasurable, but he certainly worked on a number of different important projects throughout his tenure. Everything from the opening of the Australia exhibit to the new rainforest, the Stillwater carousel. That's a very, very long list. And I think the sum total of all of his detailed contributions speaks volumes about what he contributed here over his 30 years. And we're so grateful to him. And it's my pleasure to be here today to thank him for his service and to tell him that we already miss him and that we will be glad to have him back. But I know he's enjoying his retirement. I think you said this morning that every day was the first day of your vacation. So that's a nice place to be in life. So as I said, we already miss him. His contribution to so many different events, such as Zippity Zoodoo, Earth Day, Asian Lanterns, Twilight at the Zoo, all of our Christmas lights and everything else. It's a long, long list, and certainly I won't be able to stand up here today and thank him for everything, but just that some contribution of what he's given to the zoo is immeasurable. So thank you, Bill.
So the Board of Park Commissioner, I wish you all the best in your garage sailing and all. Our next retiring guest is Denise Brown. Denise was a grounds maintenance worker for Cleveland Metro Parks for more than 30 years. She served in a variety of different positions, including senior service worker, grounds maintenance. She maintained ball diamonds, parkways, polo fields. She was part of the team who transformed Euclid Beach Wildwood and parts of the Lakefront Reservation. We will certainly miss her time and service to Cleveland Metro Parks. We will be mailing her resolution. Terry, come in. I don't think she wanted to come in, but she's good. Terry, you're holding up the meeting. She was working.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So Terry Gasser, I'm not going to read what's on the paper because I don't think that really reflects who Terry is. And Terry and I have been attached at the hip for about 10 years now. Terry is one of those individuals that she has an uncanny ability to anticipate, forecast. She makes great pretzel jello. that we have a succession plan in place for the pretzel jello, so we're good there. But all in all, Terry has been a very good friend of mine, a confidant. She has really guided me through some things over the last 10 years. I know I'm getting emotional now, but she has been really close to me, and hate to see her go. Just the other day, I asked her, I said, when are you leaving? And she said, she looked at me, she said, the 31st. I said, well, I thought it would change between now. So, but she's been really close. She's been a confidant, really close to me over the last 10 years. And I'm going to hate to see her go. But I wish her the best in retirement. She deserves it after 32 years. And
I'd like to say, first of all, I've worked with some fabulous people. There's been outstanding leaders here. And so it will be difficult to leave, but now I'll have some time to go and visit all the wonderful places that we have here. And I'm going to get choked. But seriously, I've enjoyed all of my years here. I can't believe 32 years has already passed by. I've had two basic careers. One job I held for 16 years and then here for 32. So doing, you know, working just two places is amazing. Only three direct supervisors and two CEOs. That says a lot for the organization.
I'll come to get your resolution. So Terry is one of the first people that I met along the way. And as Harold said, it is his security blanket, but she has been the security blanket of the entire agency. You need to know something about HR, you ask Terry. And if you don't ask Terry, you ask Sherry, who's behind her, and they represent almost 60 plus years worth of service to the Metro Park. So on behalf of Anthony J. Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, the entire team, and all the employees, for missions, anniversaries, all of the things you've done, and the wonderful pretzel jelly. Our next retiring guest is Sean McHugh, Executive Director of the Golf Operations. He spent more than 24 years building, maintaining, overseeing construction of not only, bless you, of our Washington Park Golf Course, which is our Audubon International Cooperative Sanctuary Program. He has done significant renovations at Seneca Golf Course. He has laid a hand in each one of the properties over his more than 24 years of service. He also helped produce record numbers of golf rounds during the pandemic. We would certainly like to thank Sean for all of his volunteer opportunities that include Dream Night and all the other operations that Sean has done for Cleveland Metro Parks. So I'd like to recognize Sean McHugh for his 24 years of service. Our next retiring guest is Rich Sabota. He was a police captain. He was here for more than 32 years. He served in multiple capacities that included ranger, mounted unit, ranger lieutenant, and most recently, his last position was ranger captain. He did make a significant impact as the interim ranger chief for a period of months. We would like to thank him for being a field training officer, firearms instructor. He served again on the mounted, the bike police units, West Side Interagency Rescue Team. And we would like to thank Rich Sabota, police captain, for more than 32 years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks. Our last retiring guest is with us this morning. He has already received his resolution, but we will be thanking him. And Blake, if you'd like to come forward and recognize Paul Wakefield, senior tech. Paul has had more than 10 years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks.
My pleasure to introduce Paul Wakefield. I've worked with Paul since 2012. He's been an integral part of around the park, mainly. Special note was the Brexville restrooms, flush restrooms, and then the Huntington concession stand and the Huntington flush restrooms. If you have you ever get a moment, you want to see some impressive work, I would step behind the wall into the mechanical room and you'll see some professional work that is well thought out. That it's very impressive. Paul, I couldn't ask for a better co-worker. He's the most professional and master of his trade that I've ever met. I've learned a lot from Paul myself, and he's taught all his coworkers, you know, back in Billion Trades, things, and they won't forget for years to come. Paul, right now, he's looking forward to golfing. Enjoys all Metro Parks courses. He can't wait to go do it again.
Paul, anything you'd like to say?
Thank you.
His very first project was Seneca Golf Course. When he got here, do you remember that?
First one.
So he's done a lot of work for us, and he's been here almost as long as I have. We appreciate his time, and we.
Thank you.
On the mid portion of page 11, we are recognizing William Beckris, Denise Brown, Terry Gasser, Sean McHugh, Rich Savoda, and Paul Wakefield for their 160 years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the 2021 budget adjustment number 8. Bill?
Budget adjustment number 8 is for $968,536. These are appropriating all or new restricted funds, about $861,000 of which were for the previously discussed French Street property. A detailed explanation of these adjustments can be found on agenda pages 48 to 50, and the recommended action falls on the top of page 12.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the State of Ohio Authorized Services Agreement. It's an authorization to enter into a contract amendment with the audit firm for Cleveland Metro Parks for the annual financial audits for the years 2021 through 2025. This is prescribed by Ohio Revised Code 4701.19, requires the auditor of the state to perform an annual financial audit of all public offices. We have most recently worked with Clark Schaefer and Hackett and Company for an initial term that ended this particular year. We were just notified by the auditor of state that due to scheduling constraints, they would extend the contract with Clark Schaefer and Hackett Company for an additional 5 years. Recommendation falls on the mid portion of page 13 to execute the state authorized service code of 6597 for the auditor of state work for Clark Schaefer and Hackett.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the Ohio and Erie Canal and Rocky River reservations. This is authorization to submit grant applications and commit funds. This is a new program. This is the Outdoor Recreation Legacy Partnership. Requires funds to develop land for outdoor recreation areas. This program funds in designated urbanized areas as defined by the US Census. We have two projects. One of them includes the Hog's Back Lane. This is Cleveland Metro Parks requesting funds to design, engineer, and construct a 2,200 plus foot trail along Hog's Back Lane in Rocky River Reservation. It's currently a 22 foot wide paved roadway. This is one of the main access points that comes near the city of Cleveland, city of Lakewood, and Fairview Park. It has been maintained as a roadway for many years. We have had some challenges with the grade, but we are working through and forward with this new outdoor legacy partnership program. It is a 50% match. Cleveland Metro Parks would match the funds then for a total cost of $4.2 million.
So Brian, can I ask a question? Is that just that steep hill going up? And then what modifications will we make to it then?
Well, that's going to be part of the design process.
Yeah.
That, as the commissioners may remember, we partnered with Fairview Hospital / Cleveland Clinic to help stabilize the backside of it in previous years. On the, I would say, the southern side, we have had some sloughing, so we've had to revet and layer new asphalt on for a period of years. So this will be all part of the design contract to actually bring forward hopefully some of the slope stabilization that needs to be done, and as well as the trail. And it may be switchbacked. It may be a couple of different ways that this. Sean is here if he wants to weigh in as well.
So it's a seriously, it's a complicated,
problem.
Yeah. And it's to make it sustainable.
And again, this is a new funding source that we had not seen before.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, commissioners. As Brian said, we've got a long history here on Hog's Back. We've got some geotechnical conditions, and study after study and actually comment after public comment shows that this connection is very needed. So we're really hoping that we can address all the engineering issues. A $4.3 million project for 2,200 linear feet is expensive.
Yeah, it's not
chump change. It's what it takes to get all the retaining walls and the geotechnical matters addressed here.
So Sean, you can't do switchback, so can you? It's too steep for that, isn't it?
I don't want to say it's too steep. We might look at a switchback option, but we really need to get this next phase of engineering done in order to determine the exact alignment.
Yeah. But good luck to you. I mean, that looks real complicated.
It's been a chronic issue.
Yeah.
It has.
Would it be north or south of the road?
There is a tremendous amount of things at play right now with the Hilliard Bridge, as you've seen, being one of them. And there's some great momentum on the Hilliard Bridge with the design that I think we can all get behind, hopefully. And one of those ideas is putting to allow some costs for the project to come back into the budget is a roundabout at Riverside and Hilliard, which then allows the bridge to be narrow, which then allows the all-purpose trail to be put on the bridge, which then allows the all-purpose trail to come down the west side of Riverside and then the north side of Hogsback.
Wow.
So all of these things have to work together in concert. So that's why there's a
lot. And then the trail is part of the stabilization, Mike?
Yes, exactly.
But this funding would actually build component, correct? There's construction dollars in here as well.
There is. This, what's being requested today for authorization to submit would be from Riverside Drive down to the valley floor for construction.
Soup to nuts.
Soup to nuts.
Wow.
That's excellent.
Again, this is a new funding source. The next project is the Cleveland Flats Rivergate Park expansion opportunity. This is a request to acquire and restore 1.1 acres on the Cuyahoga River near Heritage and Rivergate Parks. It is referred to as the Marlin property. It is off the industrial channel. It's in the industrial area of the flats. This is 300 plus or minus linear feet of riverfront. We seek to restore it to green space. Again, this is for acquisition and opportunity to restore. This is again a 50% match project. Recommended action to, it is in the top portion there.
One question, are these very competitive dollars?
This is a new funding source, so we're not exactly sure. There isn't a history on it of what they have funded or have not funded, but we just know that this was such a unique opportunity for a 50-50, which is kind of unheard of. And it's very targeted for very specific projects, so it's very narrow in what you can apply for.
And is there, was there like an application period or is it rolling?
Yes, I do not believe it was rolling. I think it was a deadline.
Wow. Impressive. Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
The next action item is the authorization of a land acquisition known as the Stiles property. This is in Big Creek Reservation. I'll let David bring it up. This is off of Fowles Road. This is in the city of Middleburg Heights. We most recently had seen a, We had most recently come to find that the property was for sale. As the park commissioners know, that we have worked very hard at threading a trail through there. We've purchased land to the northeast of there, where we'll be dedicating a trail here with the mayor of Middleburg Heights in short order. But this continues the preservation along the rail corridor. We were able to secure the property in a fee simple title for $190,000. This will continue to buffer the trail corridor right through there. The property that's to the due north of it, we were most recently able to secure that within the last 3 years. Again, this is part of the plan of buffering the lake-to-lake trail in Big Creek Reservation. The recommended action falls if there are no questions on the mid to low portion of page 15.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
The next action item, have the map come up. This is the authorization of a land acquisition. This is the Flats Industrial Railroad Company. We have worked successfully with Flats Industrial Railroad Company over the last number of years. They helped in creating Rivergate Park back in 2012. Merwin's Wharf became established in 2014. We've continued to find unique ways to buffer property along and through Rivergate Park. We've continued to expand it. We've continued to expand trail connections that include the Red Line Greenway, Cleveland Foundation Centennial Trail, connections to the towpath, and connections to the lakefront. With the Metro Parks engaged the Flats Industry to inquire about purchasing the piece of property and the land adjacent to it that includes a 2-acre parcel of land that we most recently picked up. This is a very unique opportunity to buffer this area here on the northern part of the park. It also allows us access out to British Avenue. The park commissioners most recently approved the purchase of our maintenance facility off that parcel of on the north parcel of British Avenue. If there are no questions, the recommended action falls in the top portion of page 17.
This is significant. Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
The next action item is the police department intergovernmental cooperative mutual aid agreement. This is with the Village of Mayfield.
The Village of Mayfield
Village.
The Village of Mayfield works.
Village of Mayfield works, definitely, and the Cleveland Metro Parks. This is part of 1545131, Park Authority to enter in agreements with municipal corporations. Recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 17.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the adoption of the revised Cleveland Metro Parks Codified Rules and Regulations. Rose?
Thank you, Brian. This is our annual update to our regulations. Most of the edits are driven by the changes in the Ohio Revised Code and impact the changes to our criminal code sections. And the other changes are updating some of the language we made a few years ago that we're basically trying to mirror also again the Ohio Revised Code. Yes, where we had used the scooter, the micro mobility device is a broader, more descriptive term that actually may help us avoid more changes down the road. But so we've made those edits to incorporate the nomenclature change as well as some enhancements that the Ohio Revised Code had. In addition, the just tweaked section 505.01 to help the law enforcement with their efforts to have some enforcement, a more effective enforcement ability with respect to dogs who might bite a person or another dog while they're still leashed. That's a clarification that then makes it very clear that that sort of citation can happen. So even if they are on a leash and they bite another either person or animal, we will still be able to cite that that person for failing to control under this section. So any questions about any of the changes?
I have one question here, and that is item F. It says that you have to have $1 million worth of insurance. That for a rental service, is that reasonable? I mean, do we have that with kayak companies? And
so this is borrowed from the Ohio Revised Code language, and so we're reflecting that. We do have insurance requirements of our management companies, and yes, I'm pretty sure that it's at that level.
The kayak people. Yes. Okay, I got you. The other thing, it's a little confusing to me, and I don't think we should change it, but what is a micro mobility device? I mean, could it be the same as a class one bicycle?
No, I think that when we have the definition of the of the bicycles versus the micro mobility device, there are some key distinctions. So it is clear.
Defined in the code.
Yes, we've got the definitions, and it is clear that that would not be considered.
Yeah.
Correct.
But a younger person who's handicapped would be able to use a class one bike, I think.
Sure. Actually, most people can use a class one and class two bike on an APT in our park district, and also on mountain bike trails.
Yeah.
We fully vetted that issue with our interdisciplinary staff. So, and a person who has issues with mobility actually has greater ability to use different mobility devices based upon their need and based upon what type of instrumentality it is. We have a separate analysis for that.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yes.
Well, it looks good to me.
Okay, very good.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is contract amendment to 1553 Heritage Park 1 and Rivergate Park boat slips. This is for the construction manager at risk. This is the GMP1. Back in 2020, Cleveland Metro Parks advertised a request for qualifications for the Rivergate and Heritage Park projects. The construction manager at risk contract was assigned to Shermer Construction. We have most recently worked out the GMP1 for perimeter fence, deconstruction, salvage decking, general conditions and contingencies. We are looking forward to bringing then, we will return with the GMP2 and the subsequent board meetings, but it's not limited, docking, gangways, flatwork, walkways, railings, plumbing and electric. Construction schedule anticipates a spring 22, and the recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 21.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is contract amendment 1558, manager at risk for the Cleveland Metro Parks Garfield Pond and Stream Restoration Project. This is part of the GMP1. Cleveland Metro Parks most recently, back in 2020, worked to assign the contract through a competitive process to Neroni and Sons. This is part of the restoration project. They did the pre-work. We have most recently figured out all of the components of the GMP1, that include mobilization, staking, haul road construction, tree removal, grubbing, and processing for a cost not to exceed $173,932.76. We will be working to bring the GMP2 for the pond and stream restoration and the additional phases coming forward. As we had mentioned, the board has seen this back in 2020. The recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 23 to enter into the GMP1 with Neroni and Sons for the work at Garfield Park.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the award of RFQ 6464 Tropical Bear Exhibit at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo Professional Design Services. We issued a request for qualifications actually back in 2019. It got put on hold due to a global pandemic. We have most recently been able to go through all of the responses from highly qualified teams. We have looked at the process that led us to a VAA team to perform the professional design services at a cost of $727,407 that will cover the following items. This will, it's all listed on the top portion of page 25 to bring forward the next phase of the bear design exhibit at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. Chris, anything you'd like to add? Chris is not here. Sean, anything you'd like to add?
Quickly, by a recommendation to hire a construction manager at risk, that request for qualification went out yesterday. So I'm very excited to take yet another positive step forward on increasing and improving habitats for our collection at the zoo.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The last action item is ratification of the collective bargain agreement with the Fraternal Order of Police, much like the Board of Park Commissioners had most recently seen with the Cleveland Metro Parks Employees Association. We have now negotiated out successfully with the FOP. The agreement is the exact same as the CMEA with the 2020, 2021, 2022, and 2023. This had been seen by the board in the previous agenda. The recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 26 to enter into and execute the collective bargaining agreements as approved by council.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We will move into the tabulation of award and bids. We have a single source, 6590 Various Meats, 6591 Eucalyptus Browse, our Parkway Trail and Paving Asphalt. This is all in South Chagrin Reservation. We have a Sourcewell contract for 6596, a 2021 Caterpillar wheel loader, which Cleveland Metro Parks did secure a grant for the full funding of it. And then Cooperative 6599 for trucks. We are trying to get them ordered now as we have had a huge challenge procuring and securing vehicles. So this is in anticipation of trying to get ahead of the curve. All of the recommended actions are on page 27.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Approval of vouchers and payroll.
Thank you, Brian. Vouchers totaling $12,890,878.21 have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code. And the recommended action is that the Board of Park Commissioners approves this resolution for these vouchers.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We have a second resolution for specifically Arborware vouchers totaling $142.50, also having been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code. Recommended action is at the bottom of page 40.
Move to approve.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any abstentions?
Yes, one abstention.
Dan more abstains. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, let's see.
Public comment.
Yes, public comment. Yes, please. Good morning.
After the last board meeting, I asked Brian for a copy of the agreement, which he referenced in explaining why Sean McHugh got to keep Finn, the goose control dog, which Metro Parks had purchased to use. I followed this up with a phone call and fax confirming that request and stating to include every record addressing this as well as the final agreement. First, Brian said that the Metro Parks policy was for dogs to stay with their handler when the handler retires. Heretofore, that applied only to law enforcement. Schmitz had given each dog to Metro Parks, stipulating that it remain with the officer with whom it was paired as a young puppy. Moreover, those dogs are trained in police work involving controlled aggressive behavior and are expected to protect their handler and partner. None of that applies to Finn, dog chosen and trained and focused on chasing geese. When I received the agreement regarding Finn, it raised several problematic issues. So far, I still have not received any additional records, which presumably exist. Trust I will receive everything related to this arrangement in whatever form, whether written or electronic documents, email or text. Addressing, but not limited to, whether McHugh demonstrated prior ownership of the VertiDrain equipment, which he traded for Finn, by showing a prior bill of sale, when the equipment was supplied to Metro Parks for the park's use, whose insurance covered it while it was being used at Metro Parks, why, if it was needed, the park never outright purchased it or similar equipment. Certainly a great deal of money is spent on new equipment for the golf division. How did this arrangement adhere to best practices for a government agency? The bill of sale, which was provided to me, was not on Metro Parks stationery. No additional witnesses, and certainly did not appear to be an official document. Finally, is Finn being used in any way for goose control anywhere with or without payment? Kindly explain this rather unusual arrangement, which occurred in the face of a history of misuse of park vehicles and questions regarding credentials and time spent elsewhere.
Is another comment? Please introduce yourself if you would.
I didn't do that last week. My name is Liz Rothenbusch. This month. I'm Cleveland resident and have been here all, basically. Went to Baldwin Wallace, spent years in Korea.
Can you move a little closer to the mic?
Absolutely. Is that any better?
Yeah.
First off, I want to say thank you to the commissioners and Brian and all of you that have been working very hard to make the Cleveland Parks a better place to be. I know it's a difficult task. It's a humongous amount of land to take care of and water. And over the years, I've seen the parks flourish in a entrepreneurial way like never before, and obviously I have to thank you all for that. You're very good with money and business, and that's a skill, but we have to also remember safety. And I mentioned last week the death of our dear friends. Have a few signs that would have probably deterred their death, deterred them from entering the water in any capacity. These are signs that I made on my computer. I put them up when there were no signs to deter others from going in the waters. Somebody tore them down, obviously, probably your employees. And understandable, you need to put up your own signs. This is your organization, you're responsible, yes. And I know you put up a new sign, and we're grateful for something. Something is better than nothing, right? Have you all seen the sign that has been put up in Wallace?
I have not.
It just most recently went up.
Yeah, It went up like a week ago, right, Brian?
Yeah.
Is that the same sign you guys use like by Lake Erie or other places in the park?
Maybe with just a few modifications. Just
yeah.
because of Lake Erie is a little bit different than an inland body of water.
The new sign says, swim at your own risk. The lake is potentially dangerous at all times. Be aware of lake and weather conditions, water quality, wave, weather, current, and lake bottom conditions can change suddenly. And then there's a link to quote, get more information, which didn't have anything new on it. Anyway, something is better than nothing. This may deter some people from entering the waters. Everyone knows it's a quarry, maybe, or do they? I didn't know. I went to Baldwin Wallace for 4 years. My sister went to Baldwin Wallace for 4 years. Nobody in Berea really knows because it's not adequately labeled. I think I mentioned some of the dangers of quarry waters last time. I don't know if you all realize that Ohio, northeastern Ohio, has the largest sandstone quarries in the world. And Google, according to Google, Berea Quarry being one of them. Amherst, South Amherst has the other largest one. These are extremely dangerous pits, and you can't just cover them over with water and call them a lake. Ohio and Pennsylvania have the highest fatalities of abandoned and inactive mine deaths. Drowning is the number one cause of death. The steep drop-offs of the water, the sharp rocks, flooded equipment, submerged wires, cold water. We talked about that last month. The shock of cold water can... Anyway, abandoned mines are not recreational areas, unfortunately, even if you mask them and try to make them look wonderful and put little restaurants and boat kayaks, rentals. It's very dangerous because you're drawing more people. I went there Sunday evening and I was shocked. I mean, the place was crawling with people. It's almost unpleasant. People of every shape, color, size. It's yeah, you guys are getting people to the parks. There's no doubt about it, but let's keep them safe. Safety has to be a higher priority than making money for the organization, you know, making pretty paths. Recreation has to be less priority than safety. And this being one of the, I would venture to say it is the most dangerous body of water in the Cleveland Metro Parks. I move that we do something more than just, you know, cover our legal hide and put swim at your own risk. This, by the way, is going to encourage risk takers. Ben Loziski was not a risk taker. This little sign that I made would have deterred him. Even the two-word sign, he would have never brought his children to the water where they could actually enter the water.
But Liz, your main point is that it should be, we should have put sharp drop off on the sign we just installed. Would that make you feel better about the whole thing?
Because it needs to be disclosed for what it is. It is a quarry pit filled with rainwater. And of course, you know, I know they rerouted the river and brought more water in there. It needs to be disclosed. It's like trying to sell a house with you know, mold in the walls or whatever, and you're not disclosing it. More education, maybe plaques that talk about the specific dangers of quarry, and it will help folks with history. History is an important class that people aren't teaching anymore. You know, I didn't realize, I went to Baldwin Wallace, like I said, for 4 years, lived there. My sister lives there still. People in Berea need to know what's in their backyard because their kids, now that the sign is saying, go swim at your own risk, you know, kids are gonna do it. believe me, kids are going to die in that quarry. Maybe more so than before, sadly, because they're like, we can handle this. Look, the water looks so inviting, so calm. And that's the deception. There are no waves. That's why I realized that maybe you used this sign for something else. I don't believe there are waves in quarries, but there are other extreme dangers, you know. If you're going to keep this sign up, you better put some those life preservers on ropes attached to trees in every fishing nook. People can fall in while they're fishing. Dogs that can go in there, and if they hit that cold water, it's the same problem with an animal as with a person. That's why the quarry that I almost drowned in last month, I told you about the quarry in the sands, limestone quarries in Marblehead Peninsula, quicksand. There's quicksand there. Their sign, and I disobeyed it. I'll be frank and honest about it. I was so hot and sweaty biking, had to relieve myself, and I felt like I'm just going to go this far into the water, like a foot in. And sure enough, there was quicksand that I almost went under in, because there are vacuums, huge holes under the silt and the sand that draw, that have incredible vacuums. That's what quicksand is. Their sign said, it's very simple. And it will cover their legal butt too. If I had drowned, my sister would never have been able to sue them. It said, no swimming, no boating, no fish cleaning, all pets must be leashed. Okay, that's Lake Point Park in Marblehead Peninsula, limestone quarry. But we just need to address it for what it is. And I move that you're going to keep those sign, the sign that's up there. I mean, then you better put out some life preservers on a rope and tie them to every tree, at least one in every fishing nook. I don't know, either that, or I don't know if this sign would be better, but disclose it for what it is. Have some plaques that talk about the quarry. This is the history, and it, you can't change those pits, even if you can flood the lake and make it all look like a little lake.
A steep drop off.
Just steep drop offs.
Just to add,
yeah, go ahead.
There is a historical sign coming, indicating, you know, the history of the quarry and depths of the quarry as well. So we are working on it.
Yeah, the steep drop off. This has been very helpful. Thank you for contributing.
But in the meantime, please get up those life preservers. I mean, that the kind that you have on boat docks, you know, that are on a long string, those big styrofoam life preservers. I'm talking about lifesavers. I mean, that would have probably saved a few lives on June 28th.
Thank you.
Maybe the 8-year-old would have been able to throw it to the other kids. God knows. In the meantime, pray for the family. I know maybe some of you are. They would have every right to sue, but I don't think they're that kind of people. And you're damn lucky. We are damn lucky. But let's support them. And there is a GoFundMe that you can support them. Six children. The youngest is only 6 months, 7 months old.
Thank you. Do we have another public comment? Yeah, take it up so we can hear you a little bit better.
My name is Tim Peterson. I'm from Berea. 62 years old. I lived in Berea pretty much all my life. And I just want to say what a fantastic job that you're doing in the Metro Parks. I've boasted about the Metro Parks to a lot of people. And I have voted for every levy. Never voted any other way with the Metro Parks. This is one of the things. The libraries and the Metro Parks are always a big yes. Anyway, I do know the Lisitskis. I fished Wallace Lake ever since I was a little boy with a stick and a string, you know, and a hook at the end of it. And I know that lake intimately, but at least I thought I did. But after these drownings, I went to the library, went to the internet, and started looking, investigating. And I went to fishing GPS, nauticalcharts.com. If you go there, you can see the depth chart. You can see close to shore, on the eastern shore, three pits. On the northern half of the southern section of Wallace Lake. And they're very close to shore. In the center, you'll see a shelf that's goes way out. You could wade out in that for a while, but if you go left, you'd probably be all right. But if you go right and start walking, you could be in one of those pits, in fact, the deepest one. And you wouldn't know it. You know, you're just walking and waiting, you know, and everything's the same because the water level is pretty much the same. And go to the right, walk a little ways there, and then you disappear just like Lily did. From what the children said, that's something like that occurred. The father went in after her, and I don't know if he dove. There's no, I know he drowned. I can't understand how he's a good swimmer. Maybe he hit his head on some a sandstone or something. I don't know. And then the 10-year-old son followed him in, and then he disappeared also. But in one day, three lives, you know. And so that got me to investigating. And then I remember I've been to Wallace Lake numerous times where it was drained, you know, my lifetime, where it was not drained completely, but it was partially drained, where I had, you know, look at some of those areas. Some of those areas are deep, the back end, I don't think I've ever seen it completely drained. Anyway, you can go to that, they have on YouTube. In 2018, they did this, you know, to dredge the designated swimming area and bring more sand in and, you know, clean up the area. I did read about the history in the late 1930s, how they had 2,000 WPA workers create those lakes, and how they made the dam over there, rerouted the river over into Baldwin quarries. And anyway, created both lakes. Anyway, I would appeal to you to look at those videos. Rather look at the one video and look at the nautical charts, the depth charts. See how close these drop-offs are close to shore. And even in the bend, you know, where the former Rocky River would come into the southern section, there's a drop-off very, very close to shore. You step, I don't know, maybe just a few feet, and you're in 11 feet of water. I've seen this year several teenagers swimming in that area. I've seen over in the far end, right above one of those pits, and I think we know that some of these areas have like a murky, muddy bottom. You get in there, and you're going to have a problem. If somebody's not pulling you out, you're going to have to, you're in trouble. Hopefully, you'll have enough oxygen to get yourself free. But they were swimming there without life jackets, hanging onto the raft, and talking to a man and a woman. It looked like they were teenagers also, on shore, you know, laying seemed like a blanket. I was going there to go fishing, you know, and they were in my spot. So, you know, and, so I observed them, and I was thinking, you know, that is they better hang on to that raft, because if they go down in there, they may not come back up. So I've seen children wading into the water in various places over the years, but I've never seen it so much as in these COVID years, where they don't have anything to do and they're going down into the park. I've seen more kayaks, this and that, people out of their boats. They don't have anything. I mean, during the COVID time, they didn't have anything to do. You know, a lot of people are going into the park and doing dangerous things. Anyway, I did see the sign, and I want to thank you for putting those signs up. I agree with Liz about the message. I think a better message would be no swimming $500 fine like Olmsted Falls has in their park system above the falls. Fines are a better deterrent because when you get into people's pockets, they're not going to, they start noticing that for some reason and it gets around. Anyway, that's just my suggestion. And then something to point out those pits, they have to know that they're there. If you go wading out there, you have to, it may be safe this way, but to your right is a hole. And people have to know that it's there because somebody else, it's going to happen to somebody else. It may not happen next year. It may not happen 10 years from now, but it's going to happen again if people don't know about it. Anyway, I once again want to thank you for your service, the work you've done. I'm proud of the Metro Parks, and I am, like Liz was saying, I like to make it safer. And thank you.
Thank you.
We do too, and thank you for your comments. Very helpful.
Commissioner, just to respond to Ms. Lesher's comment about the bill of sale, it's a standard bill of sale that we use in most of our transactions, and most of our legal documents we don't put on letterhead. And that bill of sale was executed at the time of Sean McHugh's retirement. So just to clarify.
Information items, yes.
We have two information briefing items.
I'm sorry, we just have one public comment per person. Thank you, Liz. Yeah.
The next is the information briefing items, 2021 National Procurement Institute, Achievement of Excellence. I'm very proud to tell the commissioners that Metro Parks was only one of two agencies in Ohio and one of 36 special districts across the United States. We have won this 12 times, 11 consecutive years in a row. This is for excellence in procurement. It's a very high standard. It's an application that is based on a standardized score. So I'd like to give Charlie and Bill Chorba a huge round of applause with their entire team. So thank you. The next info item is the first tee of Cleveland facility expansion proposal at the Washington Golf Course. Sean?
Good morning, commissioners. Excited to be in front of you this morning to discuss very briefly an opportunity with First Tee at the Washington Golf Course and a nearly $3 million investment that they are preparing to make with partnership with Cleveland Metro Parks. So just a quick little background here. In 2003, we entered into what we call a use and operation agreement with First Tee Cleveland. That set up an initial term of 30 years with two options for extend of 30 years each. So really, it potentially is a 90-year agreement. That agreement set up and established cost share scenarios for initial construction, but it did not talk about if there were to be modifications or additions. So that's one of the reasons we're here to start this process with you today. The agreement also provided First Tee priority usage of the facility. I think we can say that since 2003, which then there were a few years of construction following that, the program and the partnership has done extremely well, and those established responsible parties for operational costs, all of those processes have been executed very well with the partnership with First Tee. First Tee itself, Commissioner Berry, I know you're very familiar with this. Their mission is to bring the game of golf to many who may not otherwise have that experience. They, and the graph here on the right, I'll blow up, but they have seen just an incredible increase in those whom they are serving. In 2016, they had about 812 participants. 2019, which we always use as a good benchmark year prior to COVID, they had expanded all the way up to nearly 2,100. 2020, and everyone knows in 2020, that was a challenging year for lots of reasons, having to socially distance and restrict programming. But in 2021, they're already on pace for another record-setting year of 2,300 participants. They also work with many community partners and schools. You can see here, this is just a small list, 25 plus community partners that First Tee works with in partnering on programs, partnering to bring children and participants to the golf course. And they are doing all of this in a 6,000 square foot facility that we share and also operate the clubhouse for Washington Golf Course out of, and also the learning center here, which they use very extensively with their operations. So they have been in a process at looking at an expansion. And although what is on the screen here is very preliminary and very draft, their goals are to have a multi-purpose room that actually has a putting green worked into the carpet, two golf simulators, learning center, a kitchen. And when we say kitchen, we don't mean commercial kitchen for catering. This is a kitchen that's set up to prepare lunches and that the kids can also utilize. And then storage. They're in need of storage. They're in need of some office space. As of 2021, they have 150 volunteers. So there is a lot of need for space. So they're proposing about a 4,600 square foot addition to the Washington Golf Course Center. They've gone through some preliminary planning. We have a lot more planning to do with them. And this really is the first step in a process. So we've been in discussions with First Tee. And what we envision is entering into a project development agreement, much like we've done with other affiliates, Bay Arts specifically, when they added on the ceramic center, which we managed and ran that project. So what we'd look to do here is develop a project development agreement where we establish a few things. One is, how are we going to actually build the project? We think that construction manager at risk is the best tool. We would then lay out the parameters by which we select a design team, select a contractor. We as Metro Park staff, since ultimately we own this building and improvement, when it's done, we feel that we should manage the process in partnership with First Tee and also manage the construction. All in all, First Tee feels that they can raise $3 million and they would be responsible for all soft and hard costs. So really all project costs, we would just be a partner with them through the process. So we're just starting, but we wanted to put this in front of you this morning as we start that process.
Can I ask a quick question? So this will serve seemingly about 2,500 younger people. How is that volume compared to a normal golf course? I mean, is that a small number of people? Is it medium or is it large?
Well,
it's a smaller number, but the impact is great because the First Tee is about life lessons, life skills. It's much more than just the game of golf,
okay.
Where others wouldn't necessarily have an opportunity to even see green space, let alone the opportunity to learn about integrity in the game of golf. It's a different learning mechanism. And so, you know, each individual, one is greater than zero. And so when you can get to the 2,500 number, by all accounts across the country, they're doing extremely well. That's why they want to expand and they need to expand because the facility is, and the golf course actually is grown to the point where we may have to look at the renovation of the tees because we're taking more play than what they had originally anticipated. So there's a number of things that I think we're going to have to look at over time there to accomplish our shared goals.
So is it ongoing revenue source? Is this accretive or not?
So the golf course itself runs in the black now.
Okay.
It had not run in the black in previous years prior to me coming. So it's taken a while to balance the programmatic elements that the First Tee brings forward and then the cash side of things. What I want to stress is that it's a learning facility.
I understand.
Life skills.
Yeah.
So
that's the value.
Just coming to a Mastic Woods and dropping a ball or a soccer ball. It's about shaking hands. It's about there's so many more components that are part of the life skills that attach to it.
So it's more important than ruining a good walk by having a white ball.
I will refrain from that. Again, I want to take a moment and thank Pat Lepresti and the entire team. This is an ambitious goal. It's a much needed goal, and we will be their partner to get them through it.
It's a great organization too.
Thank you, Sean. There is no further information, briefing items, or policy. There is no old business. The next regularly scheduled meeting is Thursday, September 16th at 8 a.m. There is an executive session.
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of the acquisition?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Oh, that's right. Not so fast.
Dan Moore?
Yes.
Debbie Berry?
Yes.
Bruce Rinker?
Yes.